through chapter 7, or habit number 7, the great habit on 7 habits of highly effective people. Wait a minute, did I talk? Oh, don't I forgot the other two things I wanted on my outline as precursors to it. ManaQuest is coming quickly, so make sure you get your reservation for that. It's going to be a great event. I'm really excited about it. We've got tons of people already signing up for it, so we'll take a look at that for Labor Day weekend and get your new associates out there. And then the third thing I wanted to talk about this morning was the mini-series. A lot of you have participated in my Pathway to Presidential class in the past, and I'm continuing to do that. This year, I chose at the beginning of the year that I was only going to do one a year instead of two a year, not because of lack of interest. We've always had way over 100 people registered, and I limit the class to 100. But I decided after doing this year in and year out twice a year that there are a lot of areas where people need more specific fine-tuned training. So what I've done, and I don't know if you've already gotten, have you guys gotten the email about the mini-series yet or not?
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, you probably have already seen it then. What I've decided to do, I took 10 categories, topics, and I'm doing mini-series on them, which are 4 one-hour conference calls. They come at the same time, 4 weeks in a row, same days of the week, and they're going to be mini-series with outlines and with reading lists and with homework to be done to really focus on, in a nutshell, on one specific area for you. So if you have a problem with listening skills or you have scarcity mentality issues or you have problems with closing, each one of those sessions is going to be directed towards that specific issue. And those trainings are now posted. I sent them out to everybody. Just take a look at them, review them, and decide which ones you'd like to be a part of, and let us know. And that's the way I'm going to run the trainings for the rest of 2007. And we'll just see how effective that is. If you have other topics that you'd like to see me train on, I'm open for you to suggest that. I won't be changing what I'm doing the rest of this year, but we can kick off next year with new trainings in that regard too. So, and then getting feedback from the courses that I actually do train this year and how people want to move forward with different ideas there. So, anyway, so hopefully that supports you and helps you and, directing you. I know somebody's going to say, Mary Jo, why don't you do one on compliance? And I'm going to tell you, the area is too murky at this time to do any training on compliance. I think come next year, I will probably spend one or two Monday training calls exclusively on compliance training, and it will be a blast for me because I can finally tell you what's compliant and what's not, and just be able to really open people's eyes to understanding that whole area better. Okay? All right, so take a peek at your mini-series, and if you look at it, you're going to see that I'm limiting each of the classes because I want one-on-one work to be done in the classes. I'm limiting them to 30 people, so it's going to be first 30 people that sign up and pay. So if you want to get in on my suggestion, since it's fun out to all my business builders in my downline as well as the Monday call list, they will probably, some of them will definitely fill up really quickly, some of them not as quickly, so make sure you get your registration in ASAP so you make sure you reserve a spot for yourself. Okay? Any questions on those?
My facial boy.
Would it be hard to go to like the art of closing listening skills? The first three are the ones I'm interested in, and I noticed that you said that it'll be, doing sessions. Do you think that would be too much? Three different things at the same time.
I think you could do all three of them.
Okay.
Yep.
Mary Jo, can you send that out again on the mini series?
Can I what?
Can you send that out again? I don't believe I've received that.
If you're on my Monday call list, did you get my outline? Do you get my outline?
Yes, I do.
And double-check your email bank.
Okay,
or you can also go, the other thing you can do, Lydia posted it on the ManaTrain website, manatrain.net, and there's a link right on the front page. On the mini
All right,
page.
Thank you.
So you can go there and get it there, too. Okay?
Mary Jo, just an FYI.
They're called Power, I think she called them Power Train. Yeah, yes.
Mary Jo, just an FYI, your email has habits and biblical leadership principles.
Right. My email for the call today, but then there's a second email sent out to everybody on the Monday call that had power trainings on it.
Okay,
so look for a second
dishes.
Email.
Great.
You bet. Okay, let's jump in. I'm going to put you on mute for a second. We'll just try to dig through what we can, and we'll finish off 7 habits. We'll finish it off next week because I'm sure I won't get through a lot of it, but I will dig in as much as we can. So I'm going to put everybody on mute, and we'll jump in and talk about habit number 7. Okay, great. So let's get started on this. Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. As you all know, we've been working through Stephen Covey's book, and I've loved every minute of it. I just love his materials, and I think, you know, to me it just drives me because it's just so much a part of what I've incorporated in my life, and it just keeps supporting me and continuing to do what I do. And the joy of just having this piece of work, which to me is one of the most effective books in terms of how to run your life and be effective and accomplish results for yourself. This, if you just really focus on this book and focus on these habits, people, you will totally transform your life. And habit seven is called Sharpening the Saw, the Principles of Balanced Self-Renewal. And I gave you a quote from Bruce Barton. You can read that in the outline. But what this habit is about, it's about a habit that really allows all the others to become possible. Why does he use the language sharpen the saw? Well, the first example he gives in the chapter is a man working for over 5 hours cutting down a tree, and he keeps working it, and somebody comes up and says, hey, why don't you, like, just go get your saw sharpened? Oh, no, I'm just going to cut this through. And he keeps working at it. And, of course, as you use the saw, you know, the edge gets duller and duller. And if you just take the time out to do a little maintenance work on that saw, what a difference it would make in terms of making you effective and efficient. And that's why he calls this chapter Sharpening the Saw. It's about us taking time out and dedicating our lives to doing the things and working on the four dimensions in our life that are so critically important for our effectiveness, and dedicating time and energy on what? Developing those four areas so that we can be much more effective in whatever we're trying to accomplish in life. And so it's about self-renewal. It's about balancing our life so that we dedicate time and energy around that self-renewal. And let's look at the four dimensions that he talks about, because he talks about four dimensions in our lives, and he went through a bunch of philosophers and different people, and he says, you know, almost all philosophies of life deal with all four dimensions. And he gave a number of people, and I put them in the outline, Herb Shepherd, George Sheehan, and then just sound motivational and organizational theory. And they talk about four areas: perspective being spiritual, autonomy being mental, connectiveness meaning your social side, and tone being the physical. So it's always spiritual, mental, social, physical. And you can look at each of these different philosophies or philosophers and their theories, and you can see where they are. Like if you want to look at, you know, organizational theory, you can say the economic is the physical, how people are treated is the social, how people are developed and used is the mental side, and the service or the contribution is the spiritual side. We need to balance all four of those. We need to work on all four of those dimensions in our life all the time. So let's kick off and start talking about the first dimension, which is the physical side. All of us are so clear on the physical side because that's probably the reason you're involved in Manatech, is because you're after keeping healthy, keeping, you know, treating your body right, eating the right kinds of foods, of course, taking the right kinds of supplements, getting sufficient rest, and exercising on a regular basis really is what makes up this category of physical. And if we're not doing it, what happens is we get out of balance. And when we get out of balance, everything starts deteriorating. We start sacrificing on our habits. We start sacrificing on our mental states, and they play off each other. So physical is critically important to make sure that we have that physical side being reinforced on a daily basis. The number one area that's we're negligent in isn't eating foods. It isn't getting sufficient rest. It truly is the exercise pattern. The majority of people in this country don't want to exercise, and yet it's so critical. And the number one reason why people choose not to exercise is they argue we don't have time. And I know this because I was exactly there. About 4 or 5 years ago, I sat down with a self-development guy, and I was working on me, and we were going through some, getting in some things. And he says, what are you doing as self-honoring practices? And I started thinking about self-honoring practices. And this is huge, people. You got to honor yourself. If you're not honoring yourself, you're not keeping in balance. You're not sharpening the saw. You're not dedicating time to you. And you have to do this. Too many of you ignore this. And this is what's, the price you pay is far greater than you could ever fathom. And I started thinking about it, and I said, well, I spend my time spiritually, and I had all these things, you know, and I read books from time to time. But when it got down to physical, I just looked at him and I said, I don't have time. And then I started laughing. The minute the word time came out of my mouth, I started laughing. And he looked at me and he goes, there you go, you're too smart. And I go, I know I'm too smart to make that statement. That's why I started laughing. Because you know what? You choose. You choose whether you have time or not. You can make time for anything in your life because you choose it. No one else is controlling your day. You choose it. You choose it. You can go victim to kids. You can go victim to spouse. You can go victim to job. You can go victim to the world. But you know what? If that's victim, that's not stepping into responsible. You choose it. So I started looking at my life saying, why am I not choosing to exercise? I used to be an exercise fanatic. I worked out all the time. And then I jumped on it, and I said, I'm going to start exercising. I hired a personal trainer because I knew discipline was an issue around exercise. Some of you have the same problem I have with it. You get started. You get hot and heavy with it. You do it for 6 months, and then you quit. Well, I didn't want to do that, so I hired a personal trainer, and I said, okay, he's coming to my house twice a week, and we're going to start working out, and I got a piece of equipment in my house so I could ride the bike, and, you know, on and on and on, and guess what? My body fat ratio went down 8 percentage points. People in Manatee everywhere, in fact, people have seen me today, they go, man, have you lost weight? Well, it's not really that I've lost a lot of weight. It's more so my body is totally toned, because the other thing that caused me to do this was also working on the DVD one of you mentioned today, my, you know, reversing biomarkers of aging. One of the most critical parts of that DVD was the fact that there's one thing that changes all 10 biomarkers of aging, and that is what? Exercise. And changing that lean to fat ratio. We just, as we get older, and I'm now in my 50s, you know, we just get soft. And I'll never forget that. And I'll give you a personal comment, some of you. I hope I don't offend anybody, but I'll never forget one morning I'd been working out with my personal trainer for about 3 months and seeing some great changes already. And I went to bed, and my husband put his arm around me because he likes to. We sleep on our sides, kind of like spoons. I don't know if you know what that is, but two spoons fit in a drawer. That's kind of how my husband and I sleep. And he put his arm around, and he goes, "Honey, what's happened to you?" And I was like, "What do you mean?" He goes, "You used to be so soft, and now you're." And I was like, "Yes!" it was exhilarating to me. But it's not about losing your softness as a person. It's just about firming yourself up so that your body is as healthy as possible. So with all of that, I'm just suggesting people step into that realm of exercise. Make it a part of your life. You don't have to do it necessarily every single day in intensity, but have some physical involvement on a daily basis. You can even go do 20-minute walks and stuff like that. But, exercise isn't just about, you know, endurance or cardiovascular. It also comes from flexibility and strength. So I always recommend people do at least 2 to 3 days a week of resistance training. And that means lifting weights or push-ups or sit-ups or something that's going to help you, you know, tear down muscle tissue, which helps it grow back. It's a mechanism of increasing your muscle tissue so that you get rid of that body fat percentage. And in exercise in and of itself is a quadrant two activity. Remember we talked about the four quadrants? We talked about, you know, urgent but not important, urgent and important, and then not urgent, not important, and then the one that we want to live in, which is important but not urgent. And exercise fits in quadrant two. It's important as all get out, but it's not urgent. And that's why some of you don't do it, because you don't see an urgency around it. Well, if you looked at the price you're paying health-wise and everywhere else, you'd start doing it. So start putting that out there and just making it a part of a habit of yours, whatever you need to do that, whether it's a buddy system or a personal trainer, whatever that might be, step into that level of responsibility for yourself, and you'll see a huge transformation just from that change. The second dimension he talks about is the spiritual dimension, and the spiritual dimension is different for each and every one of us. It depends on what your spirituality is. For me, it's quiet time with the Lord. It's reading scripture. It's, you know, for you, it could be going, spending time in nature. For other people, it could be just, you know, good music and just really delving into who you are and dealing with who your Creator is. Whatever that is for you, your spiritual side is so critical. It needs attention all the time. Because that whole spiritual side really relates back to your habit, too, the core of who you are, your principle-centered nature. And you need to support that and pour into it and revitalize it and put emphasis on it every single day. Oh, let's go back to habit. Let's go back to physical one more thing, because I left something off here. This is the beauty, and this is exactly what Covey says, too, and I totally agree with him. I agree that when you start getting physically active and start putting in time and energy into your physical body so that you get more physically fit and you have better cardiovascular, there's not anyone on this call that can't tell me they always feel great. When they go work out, you know, as painful as it is, they come out of it feeling better. Consistent exercise pattern. What it does is it increases your habit one, which is proactivity. It takes you out of being reactionary and gets you more proactive. Why? Because you're more energized. So you're more, you actually increase your feeling of self-confidence and self-esteem. All of that is impacted by physical. Your spiritual dimension increases that habit too, which is that core of who you are. You know, begin with the end of, who are you? Are you principle-centered? The identity and getting to really to understand you and your core values, your mission statement. And, of course, that's one of the trainings I'm doing as one of those modules, because I think so many people need to really evaluate, what are my core principles? What am I principle-centered? Am I self-centered? Am I family-centered? Am I work-centered? Am I money-centered? What are my centers? And we're going to do a big part piece of that in determining for you, where are you centered? How do you shift from one center to another? How do you make that distinction in your life so that you can have greater fulfillment for you? Of course, spiritual dimension, great for us to get into habit too and get keeping the end in mind. The third dimension is the mental dimension. That mostly comes from school, because when we go through school and we have structured training in our life, guess what? We're educating ourselves all the time, right? We're constantly growing our mind. When you're in that structured classroom and structured time, you're constantly putting more and more education into your heart, into your mind, and you're moving forward with all of that. Well, the intriguing part of that is that what happens when you graduate? No more education. Our minds are kind of allowed to atrophy. Where does our education come from? Well, the number one media influence in our life is television. The average family watches like 35 to 40 hours a week of television. And we read newspapers. What kind of education do we get from that? Well, you just heard Jim Humphries today talk about the article written about Manatech. I mean, everything's slanted. It's just incredible what comes out in newspapers. You can't believe what's in a newspaper. 90% of the stuff is so slanted and so one way. In fact, the other day somebody made some comment to me and I said, because of something that was in a news article that was totally wrong. I mean, totally inappropriate, totally wrong. And I said, doesn't that make you wonder whether there's really a war going on in Iraq? And I'm not suggesting to you people we don't have a war in Iraq, but I mean, the reality of it is we get such garbage in newspapers, and, you know, it's tainted and it's slanted based on what they want us to know. That's exactly what is treated. So you get what they want you to know, not necessarily what is accurate, what is truthful. And so we have the problems with that. But that's what influences us. What we need to do is we need to do what? How do we work on our mental dimension? We need to read. We need to delve into great books to expand our minds. And I love reading. I'm a reading fanatic. I probably read, 2 to 3 books a month is what I do. I just love to read and just grab onto new concepts, new ideas, open my mind. I even love to reread things. I mean, I've probably read 7 Habits of Highly Effective People 5 times, 6 times. When it's that great a book, just to really, you know, grab onto the understanding of it. I also have a little piece I put together because I'm training some people on how to read. And I give them a sheet they have to fill out after every chapter because they never learned how to read and apply. So many of us read and we never apply. It's like, you know, we don't have any, our brain is like it goes in one ear and it comes out the other. And, you know, we read a great book and what have we done different in our lives? So I have a sheet that actually helps you start incorporating principles that you learn and how is this going to impact your life or how do you see it impacting your life? What do you see? Do you see a paradigm shift for yourself out of what you read in that chapter? And it's a great way to get people to articulate, because if you don't start articulating what you're reading, then you're really not getting the benefit of what you're reading. But incredibly important for us to read. And in fact, there's even a statement in the book. It said, those people who don't read are worse than the people who don't have a capacity to read. Because you're making the choice not to increase your mental aptitude. So reading, a huge thing. And it's a quadrant 2 activity. Again, it's not urgent, but it is extremely important. So it gets us back into quadrant 2. And, of course, when you read, beginning with the end in mind is another great mental exercise by staying focused. When you look at staying focused, organized, disciplined, it all promotes mental clarity. So habits 2 and 3, begin with the end in mind, are what help you, you know, stay in quadrant 2. It's focusing, organized, structure, building structure in your life so you keep going. Habit number 5, we read and seek them of how you read. A lot of people read books and they put them down because they disagree with the content of the author. Well, that's not reading first to understand. What you want to do is read a book first to understand. But we get so much tied into our judgment, our attitudes, our belief system, we can't blank slate read because we just, everything, you know, I read books that I don't necessarily disagree with, but you know what they do? They grow my understanding of how other people think. That just makes me more empowered to be able to work with somebody who thinks like that, because now I have a better understanding of how they think. So anyway, so those first three dimensions, you can see, you got physical, spiritual, mental, incredibly important. Stephen Covey says that every single day for the rest of your life, you should spend at least 1 hour dedicated to these first three dimensions, physical, mental, and spiritual. Every day of your life, at least 1 hour. And I think that's a great statement. I don't know how much time I dedicate. I can't tell you off the top of my head, but I know I dedicate a lot because I work out a lot and I read a lot. So, but I'm not even sure I spend, well, I'm sure I do. When I put the spiritual side in there, I'm sure I do. I spend at least an hour a day, maybe more closer to 2 hours a day on a daily basis. In those three endeavors because of the spiritual side of it too. So it's just a great thing to look at. What are you doing? And if you have questions about why your life is the way your life is, start looking at how much dedication and time and energy are you putting into your spiritual, mental, and physical sides. How much time are you dedicating to that? Okay, and the fourth dimension is the social-emotional dimension, and that's really a focus on interpersonal leadership, empathetic listening, creative cooperation. It's not something you need to specifically dedicate time to on a daily basis, because what happens with this social-emotional dimension is it really has more to do with what you're doing in you know, your daily interactions with people. But it's not that you have to dedicate time to do it, because all of us have daily interactions with people, but it is definitely something that requires intentional behavior. You have to have an intentionality about it. In other words, when you're interacting with other people, are you applying win-win philosophy? Are you empathetic listening? In other words, are you first seeking to understand the person before you need to be understood? Are you always looking for synergy in every situation? So if you think of habits 4, 5, and 6 and you start looking at those three, you know, focus on those three habits and then go after interaction with other people. Focus on those three principles. You have them be little buzzwords for you in your head. Win-win philosophy, empathetic listening. In other words, seek first to understand. And creating synergy. Having those as buzzwords for yourself in every single relationship that you get involved in and interaction you get involved in. How fascinating that will be for you. I will tell you, if you just work on seek to understand first, you'll create incredible differences in your life. But all of these habits have to do with where our personal security comes from. Because, see, the problem with us stepping into seek first to understand is that it makes us vulnerable. So if your personal security is found in what other people think or what we're treated like or what scripts have been handed us or what our circumstances are or our positions in life, whatever if that's where you're finding your personal security, you're going to be in trouble. You're going to be in trouble. Because you're looking for personal security on the outside. You're looking for personal acceptance and approval from all the wrong places. It's kind of like that statement, searching for love in all the wrong places. Wow. You got to find personal security where? Inside you. Inside you. Your personal security has to come from within. It has to come from living a life of integrity in which the daily habits reflect our deepest values. That's where you need to start. So maybe that's something you look at first. And again, that goes back to core, that goes back to mission statement, core principles for you. That's why I chose this topic as one of my mini-series, because I think it's so critical for people. You can look at all this other stuff and think it's great, but if you don't have that personal security from within, if that's not coming first for you, you're going to be coming up short on all these other habits. They're almost impossible to participate in if your personal security is based on outside activities, approval, acknowledgement, recognition, all those things. Personal security needs to come from within. So you come in from a concept of serving and contribution, and I gave you a couple of quotes from that. I'll just quickly conclude here because I know we're a little bit over. Scripting is a really important thing. We know scripting occurs. We know people are mirror in our society. Well, the intriguing thing about mirroring, and I thought this was a great part of this chapter, he talked about, well, you know what, we can mirror for people. In other words, people come up to us and we can mirror their shortcomings. But we also can take on a whole different role. We can step up and we can start scripting into people, principle centers, value-based, independent, worthwhile individuals. We can start scripting into them different responses. And we do that with people in our lives. Each one of you know people in your life that you've impacted. When you come with love and you come with caring and you don't let your judgments get in the way and your preconceptions and all that stuff, and you just pour into people and you just reinforce them about being right or reinforce the goodness in them, reinforce them. Whenever they might make 20 bad decisions and they make one good one, what do? You emphasize the goodness. You emphasize the good one. And he gave some examples of this in the book, and it's so critical for us to recognize this. Of course, what has to happen here, you have to have some security, internal security, for you to just constantly focus on people's greatness. Because you don't have to question, it's not a question of your greatness. It's not a competition for you. When you have internal security, you don't have to look at the competitive side of it. The reason we always pick on people for their weaknesses is because somehow that makes us feel more important ourselves. Wow, is that a characteristic in our society? And it eats away and deteriorates communication, and it's totally ineffective. Think what we can do in creating something better in another person if we just pour into it. And I always like the philosophy of we're only as good as our weakest link. And when you write that down, when you come across people who are weak, you're only as good as your weakest link, and there's your weakest link right in front of you. So why aren't you pouring into that person? Why are we comparing ourselves to make ourselves feel better? Wrong. You pour into the person, you help bring them up by their bootstraps and just help support them and become principle-centered. He talked about Man of La Mancha, and you guys are probably familiar with that little piece, you know, that had to do with this this knight who fell in love with a prostitute, right? I mean, he just saw her, the Man of La Mancha, he just met a woman and she was a prostitute, and she was being validated in her lifestyle by everything around her, her environment, and so that's what she was. But this knight saw something different in her. He saw her as a beautiful and lovely and incredible human being. And he saw her virtue, and he affirmed it over and over and over. He even gave her a new name. He renamed her. Dulcinea is what he called her, a new name associated with a new paradigm. And you know that over time, guess what happened? Her scripts were overpowering, but over time she started shifting. Because when you reinforce people and you give them affirmations in a positive direction, you can help re-script their lives. And little by little, she began to change her lifestyle. Incredible. And that's just one story. There's another classic story that they told in the book about a computer making an error about classrooms. There are these two classrooms. One was a bright kids and one was, you know, slow kids or dumb kids. And the computer, it happened in England. It was accidentally programmed wrong, and the class of bright kids was labeled dumb, and the class of dumb kids was labeled bright. And they put the teachers in place surrounding that area, and do you know that they finally discovered the mistake was made 5.5 months later? The teachers didn't even depict it. They just had to start using different training materials and training methods because they didn't find their class to be quite what they thought it would be. So they kind of shifted a little bit. But what's so fascinating about that, the mistake that was caught 5.5 months later, they decided to retest these kids. So for 5.5 months, these dumb kids were in the bright classification, labeled bright. And do you know that the bright kids had gone down significantly in IQ test points? And the dumb kids had gone significantly up. Isn't that incredible? Just pure labeling. It's about pouring into people. It's about re-scripting people. Incredible. So that's what we can be doing in our lives. So what does that mean we need to be stepping out and doing? Take a look at what we are doing and aren't doing. And the next few things in the chapter, we talk about balance and renewal, how we need to maintain balance in all four areas. You leave one out and you're denying yourself. There also is a synergy amongst the dimensions. If you work on your physical health effects, that will impact your mental health. Your spiritual health, of course, impacts your social and emotional strength. So they impact each other. So there's a synergy that exists among the dimensions. And there also is an incredible synergy that exists among the dimensions and your propensity and ability to live a structured life around the seven habits. So as you put more contribution into your dimensions, you're going to be more able, more capable of living each of those habits. You're going to be more proactive. The more effectively you exercise personal leadership and management, that's habits 2 and 3. The more you manage your life, which is habit 3, the more you can take charge of sharpening your saw. In other words, the more you manage your life and have structure, the more you're going to be dedicating time to balance. In other words, physical, emotional, spiritual. spiritual, all those areas of your life, the dimensions, you're going to be making contributions in if you structure your life. So your habits support that dimensional growth, too. But the main concept through all this, too, is what people, we need to be on an upward spiral. Look at your life and say, am I on an upward spiral? Am I learning? Am I committing? And am I doing? And do I do it over and over and over again? Am I in a continuous learning process in my life? Am I in a continuous contribution? Am I sharpening my saw? Are you making a difference in those dimensions in your life, every day of your life, so that you're growing as a human being and making a greater contribution? And that's what you need to look at. Okay, people, I'm going to take it off mute. I know I went over a little bit because we spent so much time on the AG issue, but that was really important for everybody, so I thought it was important to cover. Okay? Okay, any last-minute comments or questions? Anyone?
Mary Jo, I have a question on page 1 under Habitat, under Habit 7. You said it's personal PC. What is PC?
Oh, I'm sorry. Personal PC is in Stephen Covey's book, he talks about balancing P and PC. Production capacity is what PC means. And it's about your production capacity, your ability to be effective, your ability to produce results in this world. Habit 7 is personal. You've got to make contributions and pour into yourself to increase your production capacity. Does that make sense to you? That's why Habit 7 is personal PC. It's about enhancing your production capacity. Yep. Anyone else questions?
Hello? Hello?
Or issues, anything, any statements?
Mary Jo, I was wondering, you know that paper that you have about after you read a book, in order to help us be able to apply?
Uh-huh.
Is there any way you consider sending that out to
I'd be more than happy to send that out to you, too.
It would be marvelous.
Yep.
This is so awesome. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. You are so welcome.
Hello, Mary Jo.
Yep, go ahead.
It felt like you were undermining the importance of the emotional part of a person, as like, that's okay if you're having an issue. But what about people that are very stuck and congested emotionally, but are needing to really move through those kinds of blocks as well?
Well, then what do you suggest? A person who has emotional blockages, you're talking because of past experiences, typically because of
past experiences, and this is very profound. I personally have worked with people on that level, and I've seen some amazing transformations when they finally get in touch with what is it that occurred in the past, what experience were they experiencing that caused them to make up a belief about themselves as well as an emotional content. And then once they get in touch or become aware of it, and you do some process that allows them to actually embrace it rather than to deny it or to block it off, they're able to emotional and spiritual.
You betcha. And I think what you're talking about, if you go back to Stephen Covey's, what is habit number one for Stephen Covey?
You've got mail.
If you look at chapter 1 of Stephen Covey's book, he talks about self-awareness. And for us to step into self-awareness around what are we holding ourselves victim to, where do we need to step into responsible, what kind of support do we need to get to get our emotional side straightened out so that we can step into a realm of being proactive, taking responsibility for our actions in our life. Are you following me?
Yes. The other part of it is...
I'm not trying to downplay it in this chapter. I just think that... Stephen kind of covered all of that in chapter 1 because it is the most formative part of where you have to start. Right?
Well,
and that's what you're
the
saying.
Other thing is if a person doesn't, once they become aware of it, they have to be able to embrace it. And in order to embrace it, you must feel it. So in order to feel it, you have to really be feeling in a safe place. And most people walk around in what I see is a numb state. They're not really, really feeling what they really feel. They're inauthentic. So in order to become authentic, you must really feel it. And so in order to do that, you have to feel safe, and you have to be in a situation that allows you to feel it deeply enough where then the soul, the emotional body is the force field of the soul. In order for that to integrate, you have to really feel it and allow it to express itself. So expression is another part of it, and the ability to express it allows you to then connect with the soul force of you.
Mm-hmm. And I totally agree. And where do you find that safety net so that allows you, and that's what it is.
Where do you find it? I'll tell you where you find it. You find someone, I'm on a network of people that do that type of thing. I personally do that as well. You find people who are so-called healers or people who are doing emotional type of work. It doesn't have to be a psychiatrist or a psychologist. In fact, they can actually block you if you go to the wrong person. Rebirthing or breath work is another way of accessing it. But there's different techniques or different skills or different approaches that are out there. There's a called the emotional freedom technique.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of different ways of embracing that part of us because it literally is the force field of one's spirit or their soul. And if that keeps staying in limbo, then the person's not going to be able to be a fully authentic, integrated being.
Right, and there are many ways that people experience that. We do a lot of counseling at family coaching centers. You can do it a lot through church. I didn't ask you where you find it from a perspective of I didn't know where. I just know that that's what people have to do. They have to search out. But a lot of the emotional bondage that exists in our society, people aren't even aware of it themselves. So they don't even know to go on a search pattern.
That's true. Until they have a crisis.
There you go. Until they
and
have a
crisis.
And
then they come. I do that. That's the kind of work that I do, personally.
Great. Because I think the other aspect of emotional bondage and things like that, because there's plenty of other programming bondages, but I think what's so cool about it is there are organizations out there that actually do experiential training that you go through, you know, experiential stuff. It's not about a lecture. It's about, you know, just being in a dojo of life. And you have different events that you participate in, and it's through the interactions and the different things that you do that you have this new awareness that comes in your life of, oh my gosh, I didn't realize that that's the way I operated. I mean, you never saw it before, but you have to have the freedom to experience it.
There's a personal growth centers that do that too, such as Esalen Institute and various centers all over the world that you can go to and actually spend time, like even a week, and actually explore yourself and really come out of there feeling like you've connected really to yourself.
You've got mail. You bet. All right, great. Anyone else, any comments? Because I know we're way over, but I appreciate your commentary. Anyone else? Okay, people, love you all, and have a great week. I will get out in the mail to you the things that we committed to, which I believe are three different things, and we'll get that done today, so you'll have those in your hands, and we'll just move forward. Okay, love you all. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Thanks so much, Mary Jo.
The moderator